In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It is time to talk movies. As we do each Monday afternoon, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10 at 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Alan Adams of The Main Edge is indeed right here in our studios. Welcome, Mr. Adams.
Hello. How's it going, guys?
Fantastic. Yourself?
Can't complain.
Good.
Had a good time out this weekend. Was telling you our good friend Dustin is going to be getting married this fall, and he had his bachelor party.
That's awesome.
Was this weekend. And so couple of folks from up here and some folks from down there, we got together, went to the beer festival at Thompson's Point, which was super fun. Got together, played some cards, went out to dinner, walked to various bars in the rain in Portland on Saturday night. It was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. And we were also chatting during the break and making plans because we're less than 3 weeks away from Wayne's Wiffle for a Wish.
Yeah.
And Team Downtown got to gear up for another championship run.
Yes, and that's it's funny that you mentioned it. That's a nice little tease for the coming week's cover story. Because I'm sure a lot of the people out there might know, but this is the 10th year of Wayne's Wiffle for a Wish.
That's fantastic.
It's pretty great. It's like I talked to Wayne the other day. Just for a little interview. We're gonna do a cover story, and it's. Like I told him, making anything last for 10 years in this day and age is pretty impressive. And to do something that is so, like, such a big operation is kudos to him. Mm. And they've got an outside shot at reaching the six-figure mark if they have a good year this year. So, like, that's – if you're out there and you're looking to throw some money at a good cause, Wayne's Wiffle for a Wish, that's definitely the way to go.
Very cool. All right, now we got the team back together. Three of us. Stack, of course, will be back with us.
Excellent.
And I think Bryce is making his return.
Oh, is Bryce coming back?
Yeah.
Sorry, executive division.
Which means you can go back to being ace closer, Alan Adams. Just coming in for the change of pace after three innings of heat, you come in with your unhittable junk for two innings.
That's good. That's actually really good because I was actually thinking about this. That's the weekend before I head off to Los Angeles,
right.
And it's like, well, if my shoulder and elbow are throbbing from throwing 300 pitches, is that going to affect my buzzing reflex? I don't know. Probably not because I'm a gamer.
Yeah.
But you never know. So
then I saw the story today that Tribeca gave an interview when he's talking about retirement.
I know.
Contract ends in 2020. And I thought to myself, do you think in the back of his mind, he's thinking that, when Alan comes on the show and breaks Ken Jennings' record, what else do I have to stay around for?
Well, I figure we'll just retire together. he said he's leaving in 2020, so that seems about right.
Yeah.
So I just have to win, something like 400 consecutive episodes?
There you go.
Yeah. How hard can it be?
It's not beyond the realm of possibility. You've managed to win at home.
That's right. Yeah, I'm in the door, and that's really I'm very.
But
excited.
That's only because Stella has no thumbs and can't work the buzzer.
Oh God, yeah. If I was playing against her, that would be unfair for everybody.
Well, let's talk movies here. What did you get to see this weekend?
I saw a couple of movies. I saw the latest installment in the Mission Impossible franchise, Mission Impossible Fallout. And I saw based on the TV series, I saw Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Alrighty.
Which would you like to talk about first, Rich?
Oh, Teen Titans, clearly.
Sure.
Yes.
I was mostly unfamiliar with the show on which this movie is based. It's just called Teen Titans Go! ! And it features the Teen Titans from DC comic books. This iteration of the team, because there have been a number over the years. I was actually a reader of the comic book back in the early mid '80s. But it's Robin, Batman's sidekick, Robin, Cyborg, Beast Boy, who's a shapeshifter, Raven, who is some sort of alien magic person, and then you have Starfire, who's another alien warrior princess type. And it's like they're, it's this very, it's this non-canonical, like very goofy TV show, I guess. And so they basically wanted to make a feature-length version of that. The thing about it is, I went in thinking, well, this is going to be stupid and I'm going to waste my time. I left feeling confused because I had such a good time. It was one of those experiences. Because it's, here's the thing, like it's goofy and it's packed with like fart jokes and other juvenile humor, which obviously is in my wheelhouse. But it's also a lot smarter than I was gonna give it credit for. And they made a couple of real deep cut references to DC Comics to an extent where I, at one point, I genuinely like turned around in my seat, looked around, and I'm like, I have to be the only person in this room who's getting this joke right now. And it was really interesting. And there were a couple of great musical numbers, and it's just one of those ridiculous sorts of movie going experiences that was far greater than I had anticipated. The basic story, for what it's worth, is the Teen Titans, they're fighting crime, but nobody really takes them seriously. They make stupid jokes and they dance around, they sing songs or whatever. And so they get kind of scolded almost by the more senior Justice Leaguers, including Superman, voiced by Nicolas Cage.
All right.
Wonder Woman, voiced by pop star Halsey.
Nice.
Green Lantern is hip hop's Lil Yachty.
Okay.
And in smaller roles, as far as like known superhero quantities, Jimmy Kimmel's Batman. Will Wheaton is the Flash.
Nice.
And Patton Oswalt is the Atom.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's great. And they're small parts, but it's just delightful to have them. And anyway, so they decide that the only way to get taken seriously is if somebody makes a superhero movie about them, because that's how we operate. Like, superhero movies are how you know that you're a real superhero. So they go to Hollywood and try to pitch the most noted movie director of superhero movies, named Jade Wilson. Which is a hilarious joke when you find out who the villain of the movie is. But anyway, Jade Wilson, voiced by Kristen Bell. And she turns him down, says, yeah, you know, if you want to be a real hero, you need an arch nemesis. And so they go looking for an arch nemesis, and they find one in this character, Slade, also known as Deathstroke the Terminator, voiced by Will Arnett.
Perfect.
He is basically the joke there is he's that character was sort of the inspiration for Deadpool.
Oh
yeah, like Rob Liefeld basically stole Deathstroke and turned him into Deadpool, and the movie has a delightful time with that, which is pretty fantastic. But yeah, and then like there's this whole thing where there's a song break in the middle where animated tiger with sunglasses playing a guitar, voiced by Michael Bolton.
That is
because
awesome.
Of course it is.
Yes.
And then we go through, and it turns out that there are people with ulterior motives and blah, blah, blah. You know, it doesn't matter. The story doesn't matter. There's some great musical numbers. There's a wonderful extended sequence in the middle that involves them traveling in time to basically undo the tragic origin stories of superheroes, which is, you know, stop Krypton from blowing up. Maybe encourage Batman's parents to take a different way home. You know, stuff like that. And it's just really funny. It's really a very self-aware in a way that I just wasn't prepared for. It was a lot of fun. And anyone who's a fan of comic book movies is going to have a good time.
Yeah, I was a little more prepared because Victoria was a fan of that and of that show, Teen Titans Go.
Well, because it's been around for like 5 years. Like, it's been around for a little while.
Yeah, it might even be a little bit longer than that because I remember, and I was a huge fan of the comic book as a kid. I mean, I remember buying the first issue and the whole series. I mean, I had, you know, so I really knew the mythos. And when I saw her watching it when she was littler, I was like, okay, this is going to be awful. But the same thing, the TV show did have that level of silliness, but it was also smart. So I was, I wasn't as surprised as you by this movie going in, but I still enjoyed it. I actually went to see it this weekend, too.
Yeah, it was super fun.
And the fun of the crowd scenes picking out the bizarre, oddity superheroes that were there in the crowd scenes.
I'm just sitting there and I'm like, man, Challengers of the Unknown? Really? Really?
I was trying to place which version of the Challengers.
Right. And it's just, and I'm like, they're 10-year-olds here. And it's like, no, they don't know, but that's not for them. That's for me.
Yeah. Detective Chimp in the audience.
Right.
You know, no one else is going
to
get that.
Oh, crazy. But yes. So, Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Feel free to go to the movies if you're a superhero fan. You know, and you don't need a depth of familiarity with the show. Like, it very much, I think, exists on its own as its own thing.
Well, that's awesome. Pleasant surprises are always great.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. And on the other hand?
Mission Impossible Fallout. Not surprising at all. And that's that. And I mean that in the best possible way, because honestly, this might be the best Mission Impossible movie since the first one. Wow. Maybe of the bunch. Like, it's really good. And it's a wonderful thing, because I think a lot of it springs from the fact that Christopher McQuarrie, who wrote and directed this one, also wrote and directed 2015's Rogue Nation, the previous installment in the series. And he's the first person to direct more than one of these movies. Like, it's they've changed directors every single time.
Yep.
They've had some phenomenal directors. I think Brian De Palma was one, John Woo, J.J. Abrams, Brad Bird. Like, it's been a great place for talented directors to get their action movie on. But I think it really benefits from having someone there to sort of continue in the same sort of voice, the same aesthetic, the same kind of style. And it doesn't hurt that it's someone who has a very strong pre-existing relationship with Tom Cruise, who, God love him, dude's 56 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And he's still the same dude who desperately wants you to like him and will do anything up to and including throwing himself out of a plane just because he wants you. He needs your love. He needs our love more than he needs anything else. And so that sheer just willingness to do whatever it takes to engage us results in some pretty spectacular action sequences, because you can tell when that sort of changeover happens.
Right.
Like, and you can tell when a dude's doing his own stuff, especially in this one, where you can act like, you may have heard that he actually hurt himself, like broke his ankle filming one of the stunts. Like, that's the take they used. Like, wow. the one he gets up and like runs off, and like you see him do this terrible limp, because it's like, oh man, no, his ankle's broken. Like, he's got a broken ankle, and they kept it in because it's Tom Cruise,
And I was reading something that they shot it in a way that those who are paying attention can tell that it's really him.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that's really important to him. And you know, as weird as he is, and I think we can all agree, he's a weirdo. But it's like there's no denying that that comes from a real place. Whether or not it's a healthy place, I think you could make an argument one way or the other. But it's real. Like, it's that desire is genuine. As far as the story, I don't want to give too much away, but it's Ethan Hunt is back. The Impossible Mission Force is doing their thing. They busted up the syndicate in Rogue Nation. The leader, Solomon Lane, played by Sean Harris, is still in custody, but the sort of remnants of his organization are still out there causing trouble. So Ethan Hunt and his buddies Luther, played by Ving Rhames, and Benji, played by Simon Pegg, are out there trying to clean up the mess, including some stolen plutonium. But said plutonium eludes their grasp, and despite the backing of IMF director Henley, played by Alec Baldwin, he wants to go back and get it himself, but the CIA and their director, played by Angela Bassett, who's delightful, and clearly sometimes it's great to see the really talented actors, you know, really just have some fun with a paycheck role, and that's what she's doing here. But she insists that one of her top agents, August Walker, played by Henry Cavill, accompany him on this mission, which involves there's an arms dealer called the White Widow, played by Vanessa Kirby, and then Ilsa Faust, who is a character from previous iterations, played by Rachel Ferguson. She shows up again, and she's got questionable motivations that she won't share with anybody, and it's all very murky and spy-like and super fun. And then Wouldn't you know it? I know what you're thinking, Rich. You're thinking, does Ethan Hunt get disavowed by his government?
Ooh.
Why, yes, he does. No. There are disavowals. Wow. Disavowals happen because it's a Mission Impossible movie, and that's what happens. Yeah, and so Ethan Hunt is once again left on his own with his small team to try and figure out a way to save the world. And I'll leave you to determine whether or not it works out.
I also I happen to see that Alec Baldwin gets in a little fisticuffs with Henry Cavill, right?
They actually let Alec Baldwin do a fight scene, and it's not as embarrassing as you might think it would be, because you know in your head it's like, oh, okay, it's like I don't know, it's like grandpa who goes to the gym getting into a fight. But no, it's actually pretty good. Cavill's really, really something in this movie. There's an aggressive physicality to him that I don't think we ever really saw before he started playing Superman. Which I don't know how familiar you are with the whole saga of him having to go back and do Justice League reshoots, and they had to do like CGI on his mustache because he couldn't shave his mustache because he was doing this movie at the time. It's nonsense. Look, these movies are super fun. They're developing in a very organic kind of way. Cause I mean, back in 1996, like this was an action movie take on a TV show. This was before we lived in a world of franchises. Like sequels were a thing, but it wasn't like you built movies with the intent of developing these grand franchises. And so it's happened in kind of an organic manner. And the first two sequels were rough. They really hit their stride with the latter three. And again, like I said, this one, it's really good. Like McQuarrie has a great knack for developing set pieces, like big action sequences that are in service to the story. And granted, I mean, it's not Shakespeare, like it's not some sort of complex narrative or anything, but the action happens like, within the context of the story of the narrative. In a way that makes sense in universe. Like it doesn't make sense in our world because, you know, we have physics and stuff like that. But in terms of the world being created, within the movie, it all fits together. And, and Tom Cruise, like, he runs a lot of sprinting, a lot of like, he's on a, there's a motorcycle chase. He jumps a lot, jumps across buildings and jazz like that. And is just generally, like just throwing himself around out there, which is great because, again, he's weird. He's also a movie star.
Yes.
There's no getting around that when you watch him in a role like this one. Like there's just such a presence, we talk about charisma. There are a few guys who really have it, and he's one of them. The supporting cast is great. Love Ving Rhames in these movies, and Simon Pegg has been a wonderful addition in the last few. Ferguson's very good. Baldwin and Bassett are having a great time. Cavill's great. Like he's someone who I always like to see in this sort of role. They make a really solid supporting ensemble. But again, it really boils down to Tom Cruise doing Tom Cruise stuff. Despite the fact that he's in his mid-50s, I don't know that he's ever been Tom Cruisier than he is in this movie.
I will say, yes, he's weird.
Yes.
But apparently a good guy, too. A friend of our show, Leah Thompson, posted a story this weekend about making a very early movie in her career, All the Right Moves.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
And the script called for a couple of nude scenes, and she was uncomfortable, did not want to do it, was ready to quit the movie, and she said Tom Cruise went to the director and battled, and they cut one of the scenes, but not the second one. And Cruise said, well, if she's going to do it, I am. Rewrite it so I'm nude as well. So at least there'll be two of us uncomfortable there.
Sure.
And, this was long before anyone even thought of a Me Too movement, and Cruise was out there doing the right thing and fighting for a female co-star.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like an odd duck, but just because you're weird doesn't mean you're a bad dude.
Did you see we talked about on the show last week, the Rotten Tomatoes in-depth study of the direct correlation between the amount of time Tom Cruise runs in a movie and how well it is reviewed?
I saw, I did see that. I didn't read the story, but I definitely did see that was a thing. Like, dude likes to run.
Yeah.
Like, he likes people to see him running. And again, that's the math checks out, because this has been a particularly well reviewed film, and he runs a lot.
Yeah, I think they said this is the movie of all of them that he runs the most in.
He does a lot of running.
Good Lord. Well, good for him.
Yeah, right. Keep on doing it, man.
Yeah.
Do it till you can't.
There you go. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams of the Main Edge, talking movies with us here on Downtown.